This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. State officials are paving the way for the fracking industry. When lawmakers removed the ban on fracking in North Carolina, most experts thought the search would be focused on the Piedmont and Coastal Plain. But last week, the Assistant Secretary of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources told lawmakers that Diener planned to study potential gas deposits in the western part of the state. John Elliston is an editor with the Carolina Public Press that reported the story, and he joins us now from WCQS in Asheville. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell us about this proposed study, sort of where it would be and what we know about it.
Well, the mention of the study came as something of a shock to those in western North Carolina, as it was the first time we'd heard a concrete proposal to look for natural gas here. It's actually a very small study, as it was described before that hearing. Just under $12,000 had been dedicated for the study. We learned later that the area of interest is, in fact, parts of seven westernmost counties of North Carolina, where there's a kind of geologic formation that may or may not host natural gas.
What kind of studies are these? I mean, sort of what are the, is this the order of operations before you actually start fracking? And what kind of a study would this be? Do we know?
Quite often they pick up on decades of prior research that's been done by the NC Geological Survey that was done prior to fracking or prior to it becoming a household word, certainly. Simply scientific attempts to learn about the geology of the region. The new study, as described last week, would look at the composition of the rocks in those counties to see if there are indications of the kind of properties that would suggest there's natural gas.
All right. And described by whom, to whom?
That was Mitch Gillespie speaking. He's an assistant secretary at Diener. He's a former legislator from western North Carolina and one of the most ardent fracking proponents in the state. I should mention that since his testimony, we've spoken with Diener's official spokesperson, who told us something different about this study. That is, that it is not funded and so therefore is not currently slated to take place. So we're kind of hearing two stories.
And it was proposed to a legislative committee. Is that right?
That's right. The Environmental Review Commission, in its meeting last week, first heard this kind of wish list of potential studies that Diener would like to do to find spots conducive to fracking.
So what was the reaction when the news broke that western North Carolina was now sort of in the crosshairs?
I'd say folks were somewhat shocked, particularly in mountain regions with a legacy of mining. It's a very sensitive topic. We've been watching the progress of the fracking debate in the Piedmont, kind of thinking that it was down the road from us. And while it was certainly of concern to some folks, now that there's the prospect of it in our backyard, I think folks are really paying attention.
But as you suggested, Diener seems to be backpedaling a little bit. Where does the story stand now?
Where it stands is we've literally been told two different things, one by the assistant secretary at that hearing where he said unequivocally that the study would happen, and then just yesterday the Diener spokesperson telling us that, no, that money's not been appropriated. So perhaps the truth lies somewhere in between or with one or the other of those paths. We'll certainly be keeping an eye on it.
Do keep an eye on it, and we will check back. Thank you so much for your reporting, John.
Thank you, Frank.
John Elliston, an editor with the Carolina Public Press. He joined us from WCQS in Asheville. Well, fracking isn't just an issue in the West. As we said, most of the focus has been here in the Piedmont and Coastal Plain. And some lawmakers in Raleigh have been exploring other possibilities in other states. John Murawski is a reporter with the News and Observer. He covers fracking and joins us now. Welcome, John.
Welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well. NNO reports that lawmakers went to Arkansas this week on a fact-finding trip. Can you tell us about it?
This is their third fact-finding trip to another state where hydraulic fracturing is underway. And these trips tend to be led by fracking advocates. So Senator Bob Rucho, a Charlotte Republican, is leading this trip as a co-chairman of the Joint Legislative Commission on Energy Policy. They will talk to industry representatives, some regulators, state officials, maybe state geologists. And it's usually 2 or 3 days, and they spend, you know, typically 12-hour days going from site to site, talking to these people. These trips tend to be controversial. They're essentially fact-finding trips so that legislators can get out of their district and see, you know, some industry that maybe have an impact in North Carolina. They tend to be controversial because they tend to exclude fracking opponents from the discussions. So The critics say these are one-sided fracking promotional expeditions.
And who's paying for it?
It's part of a budget. There's a state budget for these kinds of trips for lawmakers to, you know, they might go to visit a factory somewhere. Or they might visit an industry somewhere just to see how it's done somewhere else before we vote on it here.
Yeah, and it's important to keep in mind who's, because if the industry is paying for it, that's another question altogether. But in this case, state's picking up the tab. Bipartisan group?
It's Democrats and Republicans. It's open to both. And it's Democrats and Republicans will go. I don't have a list of all the lawmakers.
Right, but there are members of both parties. So because you mentioned Bob Rucho, he's a Republican, but there are Democrats as part of this particular group. And as you say, this is the third. And in every case, did they ever talk to an opponent of fracking in those states where, because they've been to Pennsylvania, right?
They've been twice to Pennsylvania. I believe that they have not met with, I could be wrong here, but my understanding is they have not met with, this is something I have to verify, they have not met with somebody in the active opposition. They may have met with elected officials or regulators who had different opinions on the issue.
I mean, Pennsylvania is interesting because I believe one of the companies they're meeting with in Arkansas is that company in Pennsylvania that's being sued by families who say that that very company, I think it's a Houston-based company, but they're looking at their
right. Yeah, they're involved in litigation. You know, there's a lot of litigation around fracking, and this is a company that's been targeted by litigation by dissatisfied residents. So not unheard of in this industry. If it happens in North Carolina, there may be litigation here too.
So now, what happens when they come back?
what happens is essentially this is information that they would have. To inform them in their votes, in their voting, and their thinking of the issue, and talking to their colleagues. I do not know if they produce any kind of report or not.
Yeah.
But it's essentially a fact gathering, informational trip.
It does seem
rather than getting, in other words, rather than getting a report from staff or compiling information, they have part of what they do is they have firsthand experience.
Right. So, and where are we in terms of fracking? The ban has been lifted, and regulations need to be written, and then again, all this fact finding has to go on. In terms of legislation, what would happen next if fracking were to move forward? What would be the next step for the legislature?
For fracking to move forward, a legislature would have to actually approve the rules written by the Mining and Energy Commission. At least that's the more typically quoted scenario, and that would not be for over a year. But I think it's pretty widely known that the legislature is going to come back in this session and pass more energy legislation. And so, essentially, we never have a stable system of laws regarding fracking because it's always up for review and fine tuning, and sometimes some serious tinkering. So I would expect lawmakers to take up issues related to hydraulic fracturing and shale gas exploration with kind of what they call an omnibus energy bill. And then, you know, everybody at that point will have a say, and it could be quite it's impossible to predict what will be in it, but what I can predict is that it will be controversial.
Yeah.
Because anything related to fracking is controversial.
But
it'll probably reduce certain standard, or reduce certain regulatory requirements. I mean, one very specific one is how much, when you test water before you start drilling, the current law says 5,000 feet out from the well where you drill for gas, you would test all the water wells. Well, the Mining Energy Commission says no state has 5,000 feet. That's an arbitrary number. It needs to be closer to 1,000 feet or 1,500 feet. Well, that's going to be controversial because some people want water tested as much as possible. But it'll be things like that.
Right. And in terms of order of operations, I mean, you have these professionals who would be writing the rules and regulations around this.
They're not really professionals.
Ah.
They're appointed. They're people from various walks of life. Some of them have worked in the industry. Some of them have some industry connections. And some of them are just people who are involved, you know, got involved in the process and have informed themselves. But they're not professional. In other words, they're not professional regulators, like a staff person at Diener.
And they are political appointees.
They are political appointees from the House and from the governor, I believe from the Senate as well.
And in the meantime,
they're actually trying to dodge the political pressure. They've been put under intense political pressure, and they're actually trying to act to a pretty significant degree as an independent body without political pressure, which has proven somewhat difficult for them. But that's what they're trying to do.
And what are the indications of that? That they're trying to stay out from under the pressure.
They have, there was a law that proposal that would remove the state geologists from the Mining and Energy Commission. That did not succeed. There was a proposal that would have ended up taking out another person who was at Duke University and maybe the one lone environmental voice on that commission, a former lawyer for an environmental group. She's remained on the commission. There was a proposal to have the legislature write the chemical disclosure rules, and right now it's back in the hands of the Mining and Energy Commission. And they'll vote on it. They may vote on a chemical disclosure rule tomorrow. That will determine how much is released to the public about which chemicals are being pumped in the ground when you frack. So they have emerged untouched through a lot of behind-the-scenes lobbying by the chairman of the Mining and Energy Commission, who's trying to protect the integrity of this board, even though he himself is an advocate. He wants a process that looks clean.
All right.
It's been real testy, but they've survived so far.
John, thank you so very much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
John Murawski, a reporter with the News and Observer. Just ahead, we're going to go inside the locker room for a close-up look at football. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.